May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
Greetings and welcome to Attention, Please. Attention, Please airs each Monday at noon on KPTZ, produced by a team of hosts, of which I am one. I'm Phil Andrus. Our team would be pleased to welcome additional members to work with us as we share the good work that is being done in this marvelous community of ours. Whether you are experienced in the realms of public affairs and audio production, there is a place for you. At KPTZ, we are all teachers at heart. If you're interested, write to me at CATS, C-A-T-S, at kptz.org, and I will pass your note on to KPTZ's volunteer coordinator. Today's Attention, Please incorporates a recent edition of Community Tides produced by Chris Bricker, followed by a pair of songs which show two examples of resilience during the holiday season. First, Community Tides.
Welcome to another edition of Community Tides, coming to you during the noon hour on alternate Fridays here at KPTC, with yours truly, Chris Bricker, and my co-host, Siobhan Canty, President and CEO of Jefferson Community Foundation. We meet to discuss new developments, new paradigms, and the new normal as we flow along with the vaccines into the months ahead. Hi there, Siobhan.
Hi, Chris. Great to be with you.
As always. Center Valley Animal Rescue provides safe harbor and rehabilitation for unwanted, injured, or abandoned domesticated and wild animals, decreasing the number of unnecessary euthanasias performed. It's the shelter's belief that all creatures have inherent value, a right to life, and are entitled to have their basic needs met in a kind and caring manner. They're dedicated to finding loving homes for all adoptable animals in their care, and they offer a permanent sanctuary to domestic animals that cannot be adopted, and the rehabilitation and release of wild animals. Sarah Penhalligan is the founder and director of Center Valley Animal Rescue, which started up in 2002. Sarah is a licensed veterinary technician and licensed wildlife rehabilitator. She works with a wide variety of animals, birds and mammals, large and small, wild and domestic. Sarah was a Partners for Wildlife Fellow in 2018 and 19, and a mentor in 2019 and 20. She's been in the veterinary field since 1995 and has worked with wildlife since 2000. Before starting Center Valley Animal Rescue, she ran a small business in Port Townsend. Sarah Penhalligan, welcome to Community Tides.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah, as animal lovers, we're so grateful for your work and have you in our community. And I was just wondering if you might start by giving us a sense of how you decided to start Center Valley.
Well, I've loved animals my entire life and was that little kid that brought everything home with me. And it was just a natural progression. Working in the veterinary field, I saw the need for a rescue and rehabilitation center. And so I started it up with a group of friends back in 2002. In 2004, we actually moved to our current location here in Quilcene. And we just saw the vast need for wildlife and domestic animal rescue and rehabilitation and adoption services. So it's just something that's always been a passion of mine and what I like to do.
And do you serve the Olympic Peninsula, or is your footprint larger than that?
Our footprint's quite large. So although we focus on the Olympic Peninsula, we take animals from all over. Not too long ago, we had a group of rabbits come that were a part of a cruelty case in Stevens County, which is like northeastern Washington. And we've had a number of puppy mill cases from eastern Washington. We do animals sometimes from out of state. Most of our animals that we do are at least in Washington. And we're teaming up with other centers sometimes to do big cruelty cases. Our wildlife that we do mostly come from the peninsula to south, so kind of down to the Oregon border and to the coast. So this whole area, there's not a lot of rehabilitation for animals, specific types of animals that is in this area. And so people will drive a long distance to get a wild animal to us sometimes.
Sarah, that amazes me because I think the first thing that someone thinks of when they encounter an animal or they see abuse is, where do I go and who do I call? And it seems to me that if you can't find somebody locally, you're looking everywhere you can. And I'm sure that's how you ended up getting so much response in such a wide swath of the Northwest.
Yes, definitely. I'm on call 24 hours a day. So sometimes even people from Seattle, where there might be another center there, has an emergency, and they're calling me for advice because they don't know what to do with that animal overnight until they can get it somewhere, or they want to drive it somewhere in the middle of the night. And I'm like, okay, fine. I can be up all night. That's all right.
It takes a wide body of knowledge to care for mammals that have such variety in their makeup, from birds to bison to dogs to whatever.
I specialize in doing everyone, which is sort of a niche. I find value in everything. So I might be up all night raising baby mice or rats. And then I'm also working with bison or horses or with our wild animals. You know, it might be the bobcat or the coyote that would be eating that mouse or rat that I would be raising. But everyone has a spot in life. And I'm a strong believer in that.
All animals, large and small. What does it take? What kind of facility? How much acreage do you have out there? And how did that all come into being?
We have about 30 acres. So this place did not look like it did today when we moved out here in 2004. This place had been logged about 6 months earlier. It was an old metal smeltering plant that had been vacant for 20 years. The whole building was dry rot. It was a disaster. There was slash piles that were bigger than our main building, which is 4,000 square foot. And the wetlands and creek had actually been, they'd been logged through so that they could get logging equipment through there. They filled it in. We actually found ponds as we started clearing things. We replanted, we made wildlife habitat, and then we restored areas to pasture, building fences, rebuilding the building and putting in new barns, building the wildlife center, doing all of these different things. We now have a big medical facility here. We do low-cost spays and neuters for the public. We also do vaccination clinics, microchip clinics, and run a low-cost or a low-income food bank. So anyone that can't afford to feed their animal, we will provide them with food. So there isn't a reason why animals should go hungry. There isn't a reason why they shouldn't be spayed and neutered, why they shouldn't be vaccinated. If someone can't afford anything, we will do it for free. So we really want to keep those animals in their loving homes whenever we possibly can. But then we're also here for law enforcement when animals need to be removed and there might be a cruelty case. And we unfortunately do a lot of cruelty cases. 2020 was our record year of cruelty cases. We saw everything from physical abuse to severe neglect, hoarding cases. I even got my first call on a sexual abuse case. So we never know what calls might come in. We help other counties as well. So those aren't all in Jefferson County. Neighboring counties also use us to help them with animal cruelty.
Sounds like you must have a huge team. Is that right? How many folks do you have working with you?
We have an awesome team. So we have incredible volunteers. We have a fairly small staff, but then we also have about 5 volunteer veterinarians that donate their time to us. We had one of them that was just here this morning. I just actually popped out of surgery. And so we've got another surgery day coming up tomorrow, and we've just got wonderful medical support. And so we are able to do all of these crazy medical cases, a litter of parvo puppies that are all needing blood transfusions and things like that, to a hit by car that might be needing orthopedic surgery. We can provide care for them because of our awesome veterinary crew. We wouldn't be able to do all that without them. We have digital x-ray here on site. We have full dental equipment, dental x-ray, ultrasound. We're a full hospital. So we can do everything right here.
How do you pay for all those services?
Donations. The public, our community is great and they support what we do and we are here because of them and we wouldn't be here if they weren't supporting us. We do occasionally get grants, but those grants that we get are typically for a very specific project. Sometimes we'll get an endowment, and a lot of times the endowment's for a specific project. Sometimes it'll be for a general fund, or maybe someone wants to focus on spaying and neutering or something very specific. We can utilize whatever people can give us and put it to good use.
Sarah, I imagine you have large and small animal expertise from these veterinarians that come in and help you out. Yes. What's the range of expertise?
Well, I keep trying to find something that none of our vets have worked on before, and I haven't been able to do it. So even when we had a herd of bison here, I had Dr. Joel like, oh yeah, I neutered a bison once. I could do that again. We had a cougar come in, and it's like, oh yeah, I worked, one of our veterinarians used to work at a zoo. And so she actually worked on big cats. She works for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So she's a salmon vet. So if we end up with fish that come in and have problems, we even have a veterinarian for that. So we literally kind of have everything covered. One of our veterinarians loves surgery and loves difficult surgeries. So we do diaphragmatic hernias, like chest surgeries. So you're doing like, you know, major work that a lot of veterinarians would never want to get into. And he's like, oh yeah, let's do that. That sounds really fun. And I like that stuff too. So it works really well.
You mentioned the cougar, and that was a pretty big story this year about the, I think it was a young cougar that showed up pretty hungry at your doorstep. What happened there?
Yeah, so I found out that we don't always have to have someone bring us animals. Sometimes they just show up and decide that they need care. One of our workers, Alex, was out there. He was actually cleaning up the enclosure at the end of the year, getting it winterized and kind of ready for the next year. And he was clipping all these blackberry bushes back. It was a perfect den at the time. And it was in the middle of a Seahawks game. And I was watching the Seahawks game on Sunday evening. And he comes banging on my door and I just caught a mountain lion. Really? Are you kidding? I don't think you really caught a mountain lion. And I was really expecting to see a great big feral cat or something in the enclosure. And I was like, wow, you actually caught a mountain lion. So he had closed the door on it and it wasn't moving anyways. It was completely emaciated. It was a year old female and they actually stay with mom for 2 to 3 years. So it was starving. Something happened to mom. We heard rumors that someone had shot a female cougar in Quilcene about 6 weeks earlier. And it would have made sense about 6 weeks of starvation to cause it to be in that kind of condition. So we were actually given special permission by Fish and Wildlife to rehabilitate this animal because cougar are not legal to rehabilitate, at least not for release. And the reason is because they're really dangerous. And if they get used to people, they can be very dangerous to people if you're going to release them. And also they're with mom for 2 to 3 years and their main diet is deer. So how do you rehabilitate them? How do you teach them how to hunt deer? I'm raising fawns at the same time. So ethically, how do you do that? Those are some of the issues that we run into. And so there would be zoo placement for this cat. And so we were able to work on it, get it healthy enough for transport. And it went to Texas, to Waco, Texas, to the Cameron Park Zoo. And they named her Dakota. And she's doing great. Last time I heard, they had another one the same age with a similar story, except I don't think that one showed up at the wildlife center. And they were being introduced and doing really, really well the last time I heard.
Sarah, that's an important consideration. We're talking about wild animals and the fact that they are wild animals, and that's who they are and that's what they are. You're not running a scene from Bambi out there. You're actually dealing with reality.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm working with lots of dangerous animals. People always think river otters are so cute and adorable and how they would just love to cuddle one. I'm like, they are tough little things and everything on them is sharp and they have super strong jaws. They chomp right through welding gloves, towels, blankets, anything you can put on them, and they move in their skin. They have all this loose skin. So there's no easy place to grab them where you're safe. So there's a lot of considerations that go into working with these animals safely and how we are able to move them, transport them. A lot of times drugs are needed if we need to do treatments on them. We have to sedate a lot of these animals because they don't just sit there and say, all right, go ahead, give me fluids, go ahead and vaccinate me, worm me, do what you need to do. They want to kick our butts and they should. They're wild. That's what they're supposed to do.
Are you living with any scars?
Oh yeah, I have many scars. Yes. The first cougars, we actually had some cougar cubs come in a number of years back, and that were pretty small and they were in really bad shape. And I actually had to learn you don't put your finger in one's mouth. I have scars. I could say horses are probably my worst injuries, though. Some wild horses, too. They're also huge, powerful, dangerous animals. And if they aren't, you know, your riding horse that you're used to dealing with, then they're really dangerous. The bison can be really dangerous when you're dealing with them. So yeah, we have all different kinds of animals and all different levels of danger.
And you're also dealing with animals that are traumatized, that have a certain amount of natural reaction because of fear and insecurity and all the rest of it. So that's an extra caveat for everyone out there working with these animals.
Yeah, even with our domestic animals, I mean, they come in, they're scared. They don't know that we're here to help them. We have a feral dog right now that has never, it doesn't appear that she's ever been tamed. And so we're working with her. If I pushed her into a corner and tried to do something with her, she's going to bite me. So feral cats we work with, even a lot of these cats that are coming from hoarding cases, they haven't been handled much and we have to treat them. And so we can't just expect them to not be scared of us. We have to expect that they're going to be scared of us and work around that and try to give them as fear-free of a experience with us as possible.
Sarah, in just the minute or two that we have left, let's talk about adoption services. How does that work, considering the whole panorama of animals that you have coming in to the center? How do the adoption services work, and what is the scope of that?
Well, don't expect to adopt a raccoon or a cougar from us. So wildlife gets released. The domestic animals and the farm animals definitely go up for adoption once we get them healthy and rehabilitated. If you go to our website, which is centervalleyanimalrescue.org, you can pull up an adoption application. Once you fill out the adoption application and get that back, it usually takes a few days to go over that application. And we call references and things like that. And if it seems that you're an appropriate home for that animal and you qualify for adoption, then you can adopt the animal. We set up appointments for people to come meet animals. But the goal is definitely to get all these animals into loving homes.
And Sarah, if someone wants to support Center Valley Animal Rescue, how do they do that?
You can also go to our website and give a donation via PayPal. We also have Center Valley shirts and magnets and lots of things that are available on this site as well. And you can also get to that from our website. People can donate their time and their expertise to us. We would not be here without our volunteers. Our volunteers are so important. So if you have time and you're able to give it, we would love to have you come and join us. And sometimes we don't know what we need. So if you think we need something, then check us out and ask us, because we very well may need your help and we don't even know it yet.
Sarah Penhalligan is the founder and director of Center Valley Animal Rescue. She's a licensed veterinary technician, licensed wildlife rehabilitator with an amazing team surrounding her. And we really appreciate the work that you do, and we want to thank you so much for joining us here on Community Tides.
Yes, thank you.
Theme music for Community Tides was As If We Didn't Know, composed and performed by Philip Auberg from his album Upright on Windham Hill Records. This has been another edition of Community Tides, coming to you during the noon hour on alternate Fridays here at KPTZ, with yours truly, Chris Bricker, and my co-host, Siobhan Canty, President and CEO of Jefferson Community Foundation. Thank you for joining us on Community Tides. We'll be right back.
Thanks to Chris Bricker for producing Community Tides for KPTZ, as well as our Working Waterfront and Morning on the Salish. We'll round out this Attention Please with a story and a song. The story is told by the late Gene Ritchie of Viper, Kentucky, and is from the recording titled Wassail, Wassail. And the song, Christmas in the Trenches, is sung by John McCutcheon from his album, Winter Solstice.
I reckon the new Christmas and the ideas of presents and the tree Mom read about in a paper or book of some kind. She used to keep the post office over on Clear Creek at Ritchie, Kentucky, and she got to read all the papers that came through for folks. Anyway, the stories of how Christmas was celebrated off from here got to Mom, and she decided one year to make a Christmas tree for us. Dad and the others, Uncle Wash and Uncle Isaac and them, they thought it was all foolery and wouldn't be much help about it, but on the day before Christmas, Mom called me to come, her eyes just a-shining, and said secret-like, "Put on your coat. I want you to help me do something." I got my coat and ran out with her. I could tell by her way that it was something nice. "What is it now, Ma? Where are we going?" She kept smiling quick little excited smiles, and she said, "I want us to go hunt up a Christmas tree." Gee-oh, I could have took wings and flew, as they say. I was so tickled. We got us a hatchet and lit out in the worst snowstorm you just about ever saw. We had to fight our way through the deep snow already on the ground, cross the branch, and up the steep bank to the road. The nearest evergreens were pretty far up in the hill. It was hard going, slick ice in under the soft snow, and to cap it all, it began to snow even harder, the wind slapping in right into our faces. We couldn't see hand for us, and the wind was blowing so hard we couldn't stand. Mom grabbed my hand. "Have to go back," she hollered above the storm noise. Well, I began to cry. I knew if we went back, it'd be too bad to come out again after this storm, and Christmas would pass and no tree. "Come on," I said. She sounded mad. And then she said, "I see us a tree we can get to. Don't have to be a pine now, does it?" Down by the branch across from our house were growing some little sycamore saplings, and Mom took the hatchet and cut down one of them. It didn't have any leaves, but the little woolly winter tags were hanging right pretty all through the limbs of it. We took that tree home and propped it up in the front room, and that night after supper we decorated it. We cut colored paper out of old catalogs and tied them here and there with bright wool threads, and we strung popcorn and hung it around. As I look back on it now, it was kind of a queer Christmas tree. But to us all then, it was the prettiest thing we'd ever laid eyes on. We just couldn't get away from it. That was the happiest Christmas.
My name is Francis Tolliver. I come from Liverpool. 2 years ago, the war was waiting for me after school. To Belgium and to Flanders, to Germany to hear. I fought for king and country I love dear. It was Christmas in the trenches, where the frost so bitter hung. The frozen fields of France were still, no Christmas song was sung. Our families back in England were toasting us that day, their brave and glorious lads so far away. I was lying with my messmate on the cold and rocky ground. Across the lines of battle came a most peculiar sound. Says I, "Now listen up, me boys," each soldier strained to hear, as one young German voice sang out so clear. "He's singing bloody well, you know," my partner says to me. Soon one by one each German voice joined in harmony. The cannons rested silent, and the gas clouds rolled no more, as Christmas brought us respite from the war. As soon as they were finished, reverent pause was spent. "God rest ye merry gentlemen," struck up some lads from Kent. Oh, the next they sang was Stille Nacht, 'tis silent night, says I. And And in two tongues one song filled up that sky. There's someone coming towards us, the frontline sentry cried. All sights were fixed on one lone figure trudging from their side. His truce flag like a Christmas star shone on that plain so bright as he bravely strode unarmed into the night. Then one by one on either side walked into no man's land. With neither gun nor bayonet we met their hand to hand. We shared some secret brandy, wished each other well, and in a flare-lit soccer game we gave him hell. We traded chocolates, cigarettes, and photographs from home. These sons and fathers far away from families of their own. Young Sanders played his squeeze box and they had a violin. This curious and unlikely band of daylight stole upon us, and France was France once more. With sad farewells we each began to settle back to war. But the question haunted every heart that lived that wondrous night. Whose family have I fixed within my sights? 'Twas Christmas in the trenches where the frost so bitter hung. Frozen fields of France were warmed as songs of peace were sung. For the walls they'd kept between us to exact the work of war had been crumbled and were gone forevermore. Oh, my name is Francis Tolliver, in Liverpool I dwell. Each Christmas comes since World War I, I've learned its lessons well. But the ones who call the shots won't be among the dead and lame. And on each end of the rifle, we're the same.
Christmas in the Trenches by John McCutcheon. Next week's Attention Please will take us to the Nordland Store and the icy winter waters of Mystery Bay. Thank you for listening to Attention Please. I'm Phil Andrus.